This is the Sunday Messages podcast from Cedar Valley Unitarian Universalists in Cedar Falls, Iowa, and I'm your host, Kat Bean Hansen. Welcome. We're glad you're here. Today's message comes from our service on Sunday, February 26th, 2023. Our member Lynn Brandt delivers a message, A Naturalist Looks at the Seventh Principle.
You do not have a creed or a specific set of beliefs. Perhaps that is why we're sometimes accused of not believing in anything. We do, however, have a set of seven principles which are somewhat creed-like. Many UUs consider the first and the seventh principles as the pillars upon which the rest rests. The first recognize the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And the seventh is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. This morning, you've given me the opportunity, the privilege of telling you my views on the seventh principle. Respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Well, what does that mean? A little card with the UU principles that I carry around contains a bit of interpretation of each of these principles. It talks about the sacred circle of life that instructs us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. It doesn't say what rhythms or what it means to live in harmony. Knowing these statements were put together by a committee, I have no major quarrel with them. But as a natural scientist, they leave me just a little bit unsatisfied. First, I will replace the very wordy interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part and simply call it nature. So it's nature that we're trying to understand and develop respect for. Stephen Crane, who wrote Red Badge of Courage, wrote a short story entitled The Open Boat. He was one of four men who survived the sinking of a ship off the coast of Florida in January storm before the turn of the last century. They were in a very small open boat tossed wildly by the waves, which at every moment threatened to send them into the cold water and death by hypothermia. And Crane writes, and I quote, "Many a man ought to have a bathtub larger than the boat which we rowed here upon the sea. The craft pranced and reared and plunged like an animal, and as each wave came and she rose forward, she seemed like a horse making a fence outrageously high. Then after scornfully bumping a crest, she would slide and race and splash down the long incline, arrive bobbing and nodding in front of the next mammoth. A singular disadvantage of the sea lies in the fact that after successfully surmounting one wave, you discover that there is another behind it, just as important and just as nervously anxious to do something effective in the way of swamping boats." End of quote. By daylight, the storm subsided a bit, and eventually they saw land, but they were separated from the safety of the shore by the zone of breakers. No rescue came that day, and the weary men spent another cold and exhausting night in the boat. Sharks, made apparent by streaks of phosphorescence in the darkness, circled their boat only inches away. Knowing that they would all die if they remained at sea another day, they decided to take their chances on the breakers and then swimming to shore. Their boat capsized on the first wave, and only three of the four managed to survive the intervening cold water. That evening, having had time to rest, warm their bodies and get some nourishment, they sat and looked over the peaceful ocean view that so many of us have enjoyed. No doubt the rhythm of waves crashing upon the sand was now a restful sound. From their new perspective, they felt safe and could reflect upon nature for the first time since their ship sank. But the story raises the question, what is the nature of nature? Is nature that beautiful supporting essence that gives us life and comfort? Or is nature an ugly, monstrous, indifferent medium out of which all of our ancestors had to do battle simply to survive? Is nature best reflected by the moment of terror and bloody death of a deer as the wolf takes her down? Or is it better reflected in the nourishment that the wolf can now provide to her pups? Which version do we wish to respect and live in harmony with its rhythms? Are you at sea in a small boat or dry and warm on land? Are you the deer or the wolf? Respect, the first word in the seventh principle, means to feel or show honor, to show consideration for or to concern. How do we come to respect this nature? And just as importantly, why should we respect nature? It seems highly unlikely that our remote ancestors would have needed the seventh principle. In fact, I suspect they would have had a difficult time even conceiving it, or rather, its absence. They had respect for nature. Their existence was on a narrow edge between life and death. They saw death and its possibilities all the time. They saw resources, those items that made life possible, such as game-filled grasslands, fresh water, trees that could be used for shelter, kinds of stone that could be turned into tools, and other things that probably looked as inviting as that grassy meadow we now recognize as a beautiful landscape. But these people also saw floods and wildfire and drought and crop failure, the disappearance of game, pestilence, and disease. These people at times starved, drowned, froze, and died of thirst. The coming of winter, to many of these folks, was a lot more serious affair than changing the furnace filter and starting up the snowblower. No, these remote ancestors of ours had no need for the seventh principle. They had respect for nature every day of their short, brutish lives. Nature can be cruel in modern times too, as when a tornado wipes out a whole town, a tsunami crashes ashore and kills 500,000 people, or when disease wipes out millions, or earthquakes kill tens of thousands like it did a couple weeks ago, or mega droughts and atmospheric rivers that hit California. The COVID virus is as much a part of nature as that shady oak tree standing in the middle of a field in July. But respect must not be born just out of fear. That interdependent web of all existence is worthy of our most intense feelings of awe. Nature is everything, including ourselves. I might alter the seventh principle just a bit to include appreciation for the interdependent web. Respecting nature only to avoid damage and destruction by bad casting or forecasting bad weather or building engineering structures a bit utilitarian. It is a bit utilitarian. But the seventh principle goes beyond that, that by also fostering a deep appreciation and feelings of awe of nature. Henry David Thoreau said, "The universe is wider than our view of it." If we regard the universe as nature, then what Thoreau implies is that no matter how much we experience, the totality eludes us. Even after work of nature writers, physicists, philosophers, biologists, and more, if Thoreau is correct, and I really think he is, we will never know nature in its entirety. So where to begin? What we do know with some certainty is that nature is really big and really old. The observable universe, the one made by the Big Bang 13 or so billion years ago, and contains billions of galaxies and billions of stars within each galaxy, spread over a vast space. Perhaps the whole of nature is infinite in extent, infinite in duration, and infinite in complexity. In other words, endless in size, time, and possibilities. Humankind evolved here on this one planet made out of the dust of supernova and circling an ordinary star, just the right distance for life to arise. Our bodies are the products of biogeochemical cycles and photosynthesis, of drifting continents and volcanic eruptions, of ice ages and warm humid swamps. We live by permission of bacteria and other microorganisms. They reside in our guts, and they make nutrients available to the plants that we grow in our fields. The oxygen in the air we breathe is supplied in large part by microscopic diatoms living in the oceans. Now, if you wondered if I was going to mention diatoms, there I just did. We're only one out of millions of species on this planet. Our existence is measured in a few hundred thousand years on an Earth that is billions of years old. Our lives are lived on the surface of this one small globe in an enormously big universe. From a cosmic perspective, we are only a little more than nothing. But we are part of this fantastic world, as are our families, other loved ones, our neighbors, and all the other people on the planet. Although we might not be much cosmically, we are everything to each other. We have become aware of the universe in this way only during the past few centuries. Over these past few centuries, our technology has made the world a safer place for humans. We have temporarily solved some of the oldest and deadliest problems. Our children are safe from being eaten by cave bears or saber-toothed tigers. And none of us in this room is likely to starve before spring. Those who do starve around the world this winter will do so because of economic and political reasons, not a worldwide shortage of food. My gosh, we use food to make ethanol to drive our cars to the shopping center. Childbirth is not the dangerous thing for women that it was only a few generations ago. Childhood deaths by diseases such as polio, measles, whooping cough, and diphtheria are almost unheard of in this country, or at least until the foolish resistance to vaccines has emerged. Smallpox has been effectively eradicated around the world. A child born in the developed world today has a high probability of reaching adulthood and old age beyond that. We no longer plan our families as our grandparents did, with extra children to take the place of those we expect to die, as is still the case in some parts of the world. However, a problem arises. Most of us no longer live our lives in a field, trying to coax the land into providing food, or in the woods hunting for meat and fur. Our children grow up ignorant of the natural things known by all children in the past. Even most adults would find it hard to survive without Hy-V. We flip a switch or turn up the thermostat if we want lights or heat in the middle of a cold night in February. As a result, we are in danger of losing respect for nature as we live in front of electronic screens in air-conditioned rooms. I once heard a Catholic priest say in a National Science and Technology meeting that humans have risen above nature, implying it's no longer of importance. We need to be reminded of nature from time to time. We need to articulate our need for respect for nature. Aldo Leopold says that humans must change the role they play from conqueror of the land, community, to plain member and citizen of it. We are fellow members along with the soil, plants, and animals in this land. He goes on to say, quote, many historical events hitherto explained solely in terms of human enterprise were actually biotic interactions between people and the land. The characteristics of the land determine the facts quite as potently as the characteristics of the people who lived on it. End of quote. By simplifying the economy to only the Dow Jones average, we fail to take into account the underlying ecology. We fail to take into account the processes of nature that make that economy possible. And we do so at our own peril in the long run. To respect nature, we must come to know what it is and take our eyes off the cell phones once in a while. It's not possible to respect something we don't understand, and with knowledge can come appreciation. Nature is all around us, and it doesn't require a degree in physics or biology to be aware of it. Something we need to take different perspectives in our surroundings. I once started writing a book describing exercises for an amateur naturalist. Keeping a wild terrarium was one suggestion, and another was watching a wild aquarium stocked from a pond in the woods that can be as informative as a course in freshwater biology. But also exploring the backyard on your hands and knees, assuming it hasn't been drenched in pesticides, might just be as amazing. Then there are all those things revealed by the microscope and the magnifying glass. But we can ask, is the seventh principle religious? My friend Jerry Sonneson, professor of religion at the University of Northern Iowa, says, and I quote, religion has to do with that dimension of human life which has faith in a comprehensive symbolic picture of the whole of reality. End of quote. Replacing the traditional God of Judeo-Christian religion with reverence for nature is in no way anti-religious. The UU seventh principle can return us to a sense of respect for nature that our ancestors once had. This is the nature that produced us. This is the nature in which we have our existence now and in the past and in the future. We should stand in great awe and respect for the power of natural processes. And we should stand humbly in this huge old universe, knowing that we are a part of it, even if only a very, very small part. And we should stand with great appreciation of the beauty of it all. I look at the concept of nature, that which we will never fully understand, is that symbolic picture of the whole of existence in Sonneson's definition. In feelings of respect, of awe, and appreciation of the beauty and mystery of it all emerges the religious meaning of the seventh principle. Aldo Leopold says, and I quote, a thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, stability, and beauty of the biotic community. It is wrong when it tends otherwise. End of quote. It's hard not to see that as religious. As insignificant as we humans are on the scale of the universe, we certainly are not insignificant to each other. We must still be nice to our fellow humans, just as we are part of that greater interdependent web of all existence. We are also part of that interdependent web of all of humanity. The meaning, purpose, and significance of our lives arise from our interactions with other lives. The seventh principle in no way diminishes the first. Just as our respect for every other person, our respect for nature enhances our humanity by reminding us of who we are and where we are in the whole of existence. Being the religious naturalist that I am, the seventh principle is indeed a pillar of my UU religion.
This has been the Sunday Messages podcast from Cedar Valley Unitarian Universalists. The music is by Nathan Moore. If you want to learn more about the CVUU, visit our website at www.cedarvalleyuu.org, and you can also find us on Facebook or Instagram at Cedar Valley UU. We welcome visitors from anywhere to virtually attend our services on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. Central Time. If you'd like to learn more about joining us for a service, send us an email at cvuupodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.